You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Everyone these days could use a little support, and your friends at the ESO Network are no different. With the ESO Network Patreon, the cool thing is when you help support us, it's you who will benefit. With four tiers starting for as little as 25 cents a week, you can listen to some of your favorite network podcasts early, hear exclusive content, maybe get some ESO swag, or even possibly take a shot at the geek seat. All you need to do is sign up at patreon.com/ESO Network.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cletus Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 176 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Aquaman number 6, Batman number 86, Catwoman number 19, Justice League Odyssey number 17, Jimmy Olsen number 7, Legion of Superheroes number 3, Young Justice number 12, Batwoman season 1 episode 10, How Queer Everything Is Today, Supergirl season 5 episode 10, The Bottle episode, Black Lightning season 3 episode 10, The Book of Markovia chapter 1, Blessing and Curses Reborn, Arrow season 8 episode 9, Green Arrow and the Canaries, and Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 2, Meet the Legends. But before we get into all that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. Writer Paula Sevenbergen and artist Anki will take over as the creative team for DC's Catwoman with series April issue. DC hasn't specified the reason for the creative change, or if Jones is expected to return, as she has stepped out for guest writers and artists in the past.
I'll be curious if she's coming back, or correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, maybe you don't remember either. I'm pretty sure they've got her under contract for longer than this, so I don't think it can be a leaving DC thing.
And I'm not sure, so I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either. So I will admit that I'm not entirely confident on that. I wonder, maybe they're working on the follow-up to that Supergirl book that she did, or maybe it's something else. I would imagine it's she's working on some other project, and maybe she's continuing her own Lady Killer series. That's her own creator-owned thing, or maybe she's doing a different DC project. I can't say I'm terribly shocked by it. It kind of feels like that. We'll talk about it when we talk about Catwoman, but it kind of feels like maybe we're reading the end of her run anyway. It feels like we're going to see a wrap up for that story.
What's surprising me is the Catwoman series is still continuing.
Yeah, I agree. And that's part of why I suspect that she's done on Catwoman, because it feels like Catwoman's coming towards an end of an arc that Joel Jones probably tried to wrap it up in a way that Catwoman could then leave and go back to Gotham, where we see her at the end of King's Run. And we can see, and we see it in the new Batman title, like they're continuing the status quo of Batman and Catwoman being together. So I would agree with you. I'm curious what they're going to do with that book. I feel like when you end up doing books like that, you inevitably run into trouble because it's impossible for writers to be on the same page with what they want to do.
Right, I agree with
you there. It needs to be a situation, like, for better or worse, like, the two Superman books, if you don't like Bendis, you're kind of screwed because he's writing both. But on the other hand, they'll never really disagree with each other because he's writing both of them. So he knows where he's going with those stories.
Exactly. All right, and for our next bit of DC news, Legends Tomorrow has cast Joanna Vanderham to play one of its big bads. The unnamed villain is a ruthless killing machine with daggers made of bones. Wherever she goes, death follows. And her character has supposed to have ties to Charlie's past. So that'll be interesting.
I'm a little bit surprised by that, because it felt like we had a pretty clear premise, especially in this episode. Based on the finale last year and then continuing it in the premiere this time, I feel like we had a pretty clear premise for what the season was going to be. So I'm curious if this character is going to end up being a henchman, to Astra, or if the Astra thing is going to kind of take a left turn into something else.
I don't know. I think we're going to see I know Astra's the big bad, but I have a feeling that we're going to see her. You know, she's pulling the strings behind the scene, so she's going to be sending different villains out for the Legends to deal with.
Right. Yeah, which makes sense. So that's why I'm wondering if she's just going if this is going to be like a recurring henchman sort of thing.
That could very well be.
I would assume you wouldn't frame her as a big bad if she was just like what Rasputin is in this episode that we're going to talk about. She's got to be more than that, right?
You would think if they're going to call it a big bad. Of course, right. It could be just the where I got the news for this article kind of blowing it out of proportion too.
That's true.
We can't say that never happens.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, so I'll be curious because I got to say I was a little bit surprised when you told me about that because I was like, I thought that they were pretty set on their big bad already. So interesting. That's interesting news.
Yeah. All right, next up for DC News, HBO's Watchmen showrunner Damian Lindelof has closed the door resoundingly on his long-running will-he-won't-he public decision about returning for the second season of Watchmen. And according to USA Today, Lindelof has no interest in a second season, but he says he's giving HBO his blessing to continue with somebody else. Now, I haven't seen any of the Watchmen show yet, but I know you've watched some of it. What's your opinion?
I have not been able to finish it yet. I absolutely plan to, because what I saw was phenomenal. From what I've heard, and again, this, I mean, it could always change. If HBO is not going to pursue a second season because it was basically like, we either want this dude's vision or nothing at all. That was the last update that I had seen about this.
You know what? That's understandable. You know, if they don't have the guy behind it driving it forward for another season, why do it? You know, especially if it's really good, like you say it is.
Right. Well, exactly. That's the thing. I mean, it was certainly divisive for some people. I would say not necessarily between Watchmen fans, but it was more just politically divisive. But it was very critically acclaimed regardless. And I think really if you go ahead with the second season with a different showrunner, you're really rolling the dice. I feel like it's an under 50% chance that you're going to get something that matches the quality. And you're already putting it under a spotlight because then people are going to specifically be looking at it, waiting to see, like, that wasn't as good. See, it's not as good. So it's almost better to just quit on a high note.
Right. I'm wondering if he wrapped up the story he wanted to tell then. It seems like it to me, just
that's
reading
what
this article.
Said. He has basically said, like, I told the story I wanted to tell. Which is, again, I've not seen the whole show, so I can't speak to if that makes sense or not. But that's surprising, because I would have thought he would have pitched it as a one-season idea, to be honest with you.
I don't know. Maybe something else has caught his attention, or he's got some offer that he can't refuse for something else. Yeah. You never know. Yeah. Something big comes along.
I mean, when you get
along.
A successful show like that, it's easy for other people. Yeah, you inevitably are going to get offers from other people trying to get some of that. So,
yeah, you got to give him kudos, though, because you could really come back and with a terrible second season. So just having the one season, it being critically acclaimed, and if it wrapped up good, hey, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. You can tell, and he was, I have to say, to his credit, he was very clear on this from the beginning that he was really doing it only because he thought he had a good story worth telling. He was not doing this just, I mean, I'm sure, I am aware that he was certainly in part doing it for the money, but this was clearly not a money driven project. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he was very clear from the beginning that he really truly only wanted to do it because he had a story he thought was actually worth telling to follow up Watchmen. And then as soon as he thought that story was done, which happened to be only one season, he was like, he could have certainly made a ton of money to continue going, because you know HBO will open up the checkbook.
Oh yeah.
So I respect that. I definitely respect that sort of creative honesty.
All right, and moving on to our last bit of DC news, Warner Media's HBO Max streaming service is set to debut this May and is set to share some original content with its sister streaming service, DC Universe, as well as feature some DC-based shows that will not be on the DC-themed service. HBO Max's chief content officer, Kevin Reilly, said this week that the relationship between the two is still being ironed out, but hopes both can continue.
I don't believe that. I think the DC streaming service is cooked. I think they're just not saying it because they don't want people to cancel, if I'm being completely honest with you.
I'm beginning to wonder that myself, because why would you have DC theme original content just on HBO Max and not on DC Universe? That doesn't make any sense.
No, yeah. I mean, if you're going to share one way, you'd think to share it both ways. I think it's just going to end up becoming a DC Universe will basically just be like a section within HBO Max. And honestly, it makes sense. I hope the digital library stays intact somehow. It seems unlikely, but maybe if it's like an add-on to HBO Max, or if the streaming part goes away from DC Universe and the price goes down and it's just basically what Marvel Unlimited is, that's still interesting. Like, I still would, you know, I probably wouldn't consistently stay subscribed to it, but that's still something that I would use from time to time.
Yeah.
Because Marvel Unlimited is awesome, and DC's finally sort of matched that plus more with the original content. But honestly, HBO Max just makes more sense. Like, there are so many streaming services now. It's too narrow, to be honest. You know what I mean? Like, it's just not going to appeal to enough people, I don't think. And
I agree with you.
More people are going to watch Doom Patrol on HBO Max. They just are. It's just a much, much wider audience.
I totally agree with you there. So that makes total sense. But if they fold it into HBO Max, or have it as a bundle, that makes total sense.
Yeah, I am curious how they're going to do it, but I just can't see a world in which both of them continue on. It would be weird, because HBO Max is literally, it's supposed to be basically the Disney Plus version of Warner Brothers, right?
Yep.
It's not just, despite the name, it's not just HBO, it's the Warner Brothers catalog. And so, logically, they should have everything. So all of those animated shows and all the old TV shows that they've loaded up on DC Universe, why wouldn't they move them over to HBO Max? In which case, like, once you've got basically all of the live content or video content on HBO Max, really, it's just the comics then.
Yep.
I almost wonder, I either think that DC Universe is going to shut down completely, which is the most likely option, or they, you know, sort of refocus it. It's no longer a streaming service, and it's basically just a comic service like Marvel Unlimited is.
Yeah, I can see them doing that. All right, well, that wraps up our comic book news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Hey, Geekazoids! The Metal Geeks Podcast is your source for all things geeky from the perspective of a couple of metalheads.
And me, George.
That's right, and George. This is Carrie the Metal Geek, along with
Brutal Dave
and George Tripsis.
Join us as we wax philosophical about our favorite subjects.
Yeah, like what?
Movies.
And TV shows.
Video games.
Comics.
Theme parks.
And heavy metal.
Join us on each episode as we discuss special topics.
George hates metal.
And find out what's tickling our little geeks.
And much more.
Come listen to us as we audibly age in your ear holes.
You can find us on the social medias at Metal Geeks and visit us on our website at metalgeekspodcast.com.
Keep it metal.
Keep it geeky.
And me, George!
And we're back! But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers. Spoilers.
Spoilers.
We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
All right, let's talk Aquaman number 56. Gotta say, Cletus, when I read this issue, I was totally confused. did this whole story take place years ago?
Yes.
That's what I thought. And
I was in the exact same boat as you, because I was really confused, because I did read the opening page. It said some years ago or some time ago, whatever. But then it never said later, to the comics credit, it never actually implied that the time had passed. When we then see Aquaman like two pages later, but I just assumed that that was then the present. And it was only until I flipped, I was like, wait, this doesn't, what are they talking about? And then I went back and I realized that all of this was supposed to have taken place at the same time.
Right. And then you get to the last panel and I'm like, wait a minute, is this last panel the present? Because that's what it seemed like.
To the comic's credit, it does establish at the beginning of the comic that it takes place in the past. But then when it transitions from that scene on the oil rig to Aquaman, I think a lot of you and I clearly, both very seasoned comic book readers, both were like, oh, well, that's a time jump. We're now back to the present of the story. I think the only thing that they could have changed was maybe not have that oil rig scene. Maybe put that later and you start with the past scene of Aquaman.
Yeah. That would make more sense.
I'm hoping they're going to be doing something with the trench in the present, because otherwise I have to question what the point of the story was.
And I have that exact thing. That's my next question was, what was the significance of the story at the trench? Because unless they do something with it, like you said, there was no point to the story. And all the story basically was Aquaman and Mira going back if they want kids or not. And that didn't even seem like it got resolved.
No, I mean, it's sort of trying to, I know it definitely, I'm sure the writer would say that the point of the story was showing their first sort of talks and struggles with the idea of parenthood way back before it was reality, like it is in the present of the story, but that's a very loose connection, and especially given how clearly confusing it was falling back in time. Was it worth it? If you're not doing something with the trench, could you have not done something, like, could you not have framed the story differently? I don't know. I mean, it certainly wasn't a bad comic, but I think clearly from at least, you know, two readers' experiences, it could have, there was a less confusing way probably to tell the story.
Agreed. All right, let's move on to Batman number 86. So Bruce Wayne is building a city that won't need Batman. And of course we see Bruce seems to be doing this because of Alfred. Agreed?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, his grief over Alfred was very present throughout the comic.
Yeah, especially when he called Lucius Alfred.
Yeah, that was that was brutal.
That was. So, I'm glad to see the new creative team is keeping Batman and Catwoman relationship going. And it was also great seeing them work together in this issue.
I have to say the best thing about this comic was that they didn't try and go in with a big splash to like, I'm in charge now and sort of kick the door down. I mean, as a fan of King's Run, that's the last thing I wanted to read. You know what I mean? So I appreciated that it was obviously a new team, but they are continuing the story. They're not just being like, all right, I'm in charge now. New Batman story.
Right. I was glad of that too. Now, it was interesting that we had all these assassins coming in. Deathstroke, Cheshire, Malcolm Merlin, Gunsmith, Mr. Teeth. So all these assassins are coming in, but Batman knew, he found out what was going on and was able to counter it, which was interesting. But what was really interesting was the interaction we have with Catwoman, because obviously they were a distraction, and they were ready for it. Catwoman was able to track down the distraction, found out there was plans to replace Bruce Wayne's rebuilding of Gotham. I'm not sure how that was going to work. But we see the guy kind of self-destruct, and some voice comes out of him talking. And the voice coming out is talking about a perfect crime. Something that was from Catwoman's past. She was involved with this whatever plan it was. And I'm guessing she probably knows who the villain is behind this all. So I kind of find that intriguing.
We've read it's the Joker, right? Didn't they say they were going to lead in with the Joker?
I don't know. They didn't say they were going to lead in with the Joker, but we were hinting at the Joker coming. So I don't know if it has anything to do with him or somebody else.
Oh, that's fair. I thought this story was pretty good for the most part. There was a couple things that I thought were odd. The huge buildup to the what I'm assuming is a massive bat plane was interesting, because the whole thing really focused on whether it would even really work or not. And then we don't really see it. I thought that was weird. I thought that was a weird buildup to, like, it has to fly. It must fly. And then we, like, barely see it.
Yeah, and I was disinterested in that part of the story.
I'm not going to sit here and say that I was, like, on the edge of my seat. But it was weird because it wasn't, like, a minor focus of the comic. It kept coming up, and they kept talking about it. And then they didn't really do much with it, and it was sort of like, what was the point of that? I honestly thought that the artist had come up with some grand design, and it was going to be basically an excuse for a giant splash page. Honestly, is what I thought.
We didn't get that though,
which is fine. Like, I mean, that's comic books. That would have been totally fine with that. I thought that was odd. And then the other thing, like you mentioned, the idea in theory is that he designs a Gotham, at least in part, for a Gotham that can survive without Batman. But we know, like, my frustration with stories like that, and to be fair, King tried to do it too, with his initial run, also that first six issues with Gotham and Gotham Girl, is that we know it's not going to work. Like, we know it's going to fail.
Yep.
Now, granted, King managed to do something really great with that story, but even that premise itself was like, well, I mean, it's not going to work. It's not, this isn't going to become a Gotham. Like, in his run, we know this isn't going to become a Gotham book. You know what I mean? Like, we know that that's going to fail. It's still Batman. They're not going to stop printing Batman. So it'll be interesting to see what Tinian does with that, because clearly somebody else has done a story similar to that and managed to tell a good story with it. So I'm curious to see what he does. Hopefully I'm hoping the focus is more on, like, kind of maybe reinventing Gotham, because that would be kind of interesting to see, and that the focus is more on maybe we see a different Gotham than what we're used to seeing, and not just like this might be the last time that they need Batman, because we know that that's not true.
Yeah, we do. All right, let's move on to our next title for this week, Justice League Odyssey number 17. It's been a while since we visited this comic, but in this issue, we see Orion and Jessica are fighting the new god Cyborg and some other new god dude. We have that going on. And then we have Blackfire, Deckstar, and the scientist woman have located a temporal activity within the center of that wreckage, and where they discover Epoch, who is known as the Lord of Time. I didn't recall that guy. Are you familiar with him?
I'm not, but I have to admit that it was like, I feel like I'm supposed to know who that is.
That's exactly what I felt too. I was like, am I supposed to know this dude? And I just couldn't remember who it was. I'm finding the story interesting with the new characters. I like Jessica and Blackfire and Deckstar and the scientist woman and Orion. I think they have a great team dynamic, and I find their story much more interesting than the old team.
I will give you that the storyline is certainly less dumb than the maybe Darkseid won't betray us story that we initially got. Frustrated the hell out of me. I got to admit, I mean, it's just I didn't think there was anything wrong with this comic. It just did not capture my attention. Like, I found myself kind of like skimming as I was going through, because I just didn't. It didn't feel like I was reading anything important enough to keep reading every line, if that makes sense. I just, like, when Cyborg and Jessica are talking, I, like, got the gist of it, and I just sort of moved on. And at one point, I was like, I should probably go back and reread that page, because maybe I missed something. So I did actually go back and, you know, force myself to actually read it. And I was like, I missed nothing. I gathered basically everything I needed to off of just gleaning off of it, which is a shame, because, I mean, yes, I guess you could say that comics can kind of get away with that, but we've read a lot of comics that have great writing, that it's really only the combo of the artist and writer that make it great. And this one really just felt like the lines were there because they were supposed to be.
I had a feeling you'd be lukewarm to that issue. I think I've been enjoying the title a little more than you have lately.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that this is just personal taste for me. I don't want to discourage other people from reading this, because, like, if you just want a good old fashioned action comic, like, they're just, you know, superheroes doing superhero stuff, it's a good comic. It's just, for me, that's not my taste really anymore, and it's just, it was fine. I just didn't hold my attention.
I think what I like about it is there's a outer space sci-fi to it. And also, you get the mix of the new gods in it. I think that's what interests me about it. I'm interested in seeing where it goes, and I like the team dynamic between Jessica, Orion, Blackstar, and Blackfire, Deckstar, and that scientist woman. I can never remember her name. All right, well, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Jimmy Olsen, number 7. I gotta say, I love the story of how Jimmy got his job at the Daily Planet.
Yeah, that was awesome. I really like that story. I also really like the sort of Peanuts, Family Circus homage that we got.
Oh, yes. I love those. I'm glad they put more than one of those in there, too.
The way that they kind of mimic the art style and everything was, that was very interesting. I really, this is a great comic. I really strongly recommend it to people that are maybe a fan of more like independent comics, because that's really, I mean, really, it is what Fraction does essentially for Image on his own books, but with a DC character.
Yeah, it's a fun read. I love reading Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Legion of Superheroes number 3. Now, have we reviewed any of the Legion of Superheroes yet?
I don't think so. We certainly reviewed the very good but confusingly marketed lead up to it.
Yes.
with Rose, which was great, which was a great comic, but like horribly marketed for what it actually was. I don't remember if we had, maybe we read the, we had to have read the first issue. There's no way we didn't read the first issue.
So I think it came out when we were on hiatus. That's why I was wondering.
Okay. Well, I certainly did not read the second one because I had no idea what was going on reading this. But to be honest with you, the comic didn't really help with that. I thought it was a very confusing comic. I mean, part of that maybe is because I hadn't read issue 2, which that's my fault. But it felt like within the narrative of the comic itself, it was just all over the place. Like it introduces Robin. And then Robin's sick, and then they cure him, and then they send him back right away. And it was like, what was the point of that?
The point, I know what the point was, because I've read issues 1 and 2. John's brought to the future. He finds out about New Gotham. There's a planet called New Gotham. And Aquaman's trident is found, and basically the Legion steals it. And John's excited. He wants to bring him to the future so he can talk to him about all this stuff. He wants a friend with him. And something's up with Damian because the Legion of Superheroes freaks out when Damian comes to the future. So I don't know what's going on with that. I don't know if he become a villain in the future or something. I don't know. So I'm hoping we learn more about that next issue.
Gotcha.
I don't know what the deal is with Aquaman's trident. This Krav the General wants it bad for some reason. And apparently his son's part of the Legion. He doesn't like that. So we're going to see more of that. And the whole 3 issues, they keep bringing up this orientation that they want John to see. And I hope they show it to us already because they've been building it up so much over the last 3 issues. What's in this friggin' presentation that we need to know? And I have a feeling it has to do with Damian, so...
That does help. That does help give more context. Like I said, that I should have read issue 2, but... I don't know about you. Maybe because you have, obviously, a better understanding of the comic than I do. Do you feel like they're doing too many storylines at once? It sort of felt
yes.
A little Young Justice-y to me, where we're, like, getting just too much.
Yes. It feels like we... It feels... both like Young Justice and Shazam, where there's too much going on. But the problem is with the Legion of Superheroes, you got a gazillion superheroes in it, and they're bouncing all over the place.
But, you know, even it's classic Legion stuff didn't try and tell a story for every single one of them. There was a core group of characters. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like Legion has this history of telling stories, giving each character their own story simultaneously.
Right. So it doesn't feel like it's every single character, but it's like groups of characters. This group's doing this, this group's doing this, and I don't know. There's a lot going on. At least to me, it felt easier to follow than Shazam did. But there's still a lot going on.
Yeah, it was certainly less disjointed. And also, it was less disjointed because each part was sort of interacting with the other story. But it was still just a lot of jumping around. It never felt like I was able to get into a groove with the story. Like, I kept going in and out with that warlord, and I was like, what? Can we focus on him more? Like, what's going on with this? I thought Bendis had some good stuff going on. I would have preferred him to have just picked one, 2 at the most.
Yeah, I can understand that. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week, Young Justice number 12. And we got a Wonder Comics crossover going on in this.
Speaking of too much going on, I feel like you could basically skip the entire comic to the end. Because it really felt like almost none of that mattered until the end where, like, and now they're all together.
Pretty much. I have to agree with you on that, because all they did was basically talk back and forth. Nothing really got accomplished until they all
talk
came together.
Talk back and forth about nothing, too. That was the thing. Like, again, this was similar to the Justice League Odyssey, where I started kind of skimming a little bit. And it was like, none of this dialogue means anything. Like, they're just... nothing. There was no real important information. A lot of it was just like regurgitation of stuff we already know. And it was come on.
Okay, one important thing did happen in this comic, and that was Bart went for donuts. That was my favorite part. Bart went for donuts.
I mean... that's the thing. Like, there wasn't anything explicitly bad with this comic, but I was frustrated when I finished it, because I was like, I could have just not read this. I could have flipped to the last page and been, it had the exact same understanding of where the story is going.
Yeah, it was just all back and forth and teen angst and, you know, you're right. We could just skip to the end and there we go.
But the problem is, like, if I am feeling that way, there's no way. We think about who the target audience for this is. It's not us. It's obviously younger kids. It's not going to hold their attention either. You know what I mean? Like, if I'm bored by that, it's not like I was bored by it because it didn't feel like it was focused towards me. I was bored by it because there was nothing important going on.
Exactly. It was cool that Miguel and Summer showed up at the end, though. I was not expecting that.
That was cool. And like I said, the last, like, what, two or three pages of the comic were cool, because you're like, ooh, this is really interesting. What are they going to do with this crossover that they're doing with all of the Wonder comics? But, I mean, the rest of the comic was just skippable.
Yeah, it was.
I honestly can't recommend that people read this comic, because there's just no – unless you're, for whatever reason, collecting Young Justice issues, like, all you need to know about this is that all of the Wonder comic – lineup is going to be in the same comic next issue. That's it.
Yeah.
I just saved you $4 and like 20 minutes of your time.
And I'm curious to see what's going to happen. So something's going to happen. This is all set up. All right. Well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows.
Hello, America. You like listening to knowledgeable people who are passionate about what they do? Wilbur does, don't you, Wilbur? But what about Daisy? She likes to listen to shows about pop culture, movies, television, and comic books. Good thing Wilbur and Daisy found the Nerd Bliss Podcast. You, too, can find the Nerd Bliss Podcast at nerdblisspodcast.com and on the ESO Network. Just remember, Nerd Bliss is one word.
And we're back. But before we get into any of the CW shows, I have a general post-crisis question for you, Cletus. The Arrowverse shows seem to think that the multiverse does not exist anymore, and that there is just one Earth, Earth Prime. We, the viewers, know that a multiverse still exists, but it is not the same as it was before. But the only exception to this was Black Lightning. Jefferson and Jennifer seem to go back to their own universe, even though when we get the Black Lightning, it didn't show blatantly, didn't tell us what Earth number it was. I was curious about your thoughts on this. Does it feel like the different CW shows think there's only one single universe now?
Oh, absolutely. So just to clarify, the end of Crisis did make Black Lightning is on the same Earth as the other ones. He was there, at the end he showed up. They made it clear, not as explicit as some of the other ones, but he's on the same Earth now. All the CW universe is one. There is no show that is on its own world.
But when we get back to, I'm going to argue this point with you later on when we get to Black Lightning. So Let's
keep in mind that scene that I think you're confused about. Black Lightning has knowledge of the universe before that. So he's talking about his experience where he wasn't on a world where Flash and Superman existed. For all of the other ones, like Gambi, in that, Gambi would just be like, yeah, Flash exists. I see him on the news every day. You know what I mean?
Okay, we'll talk about that more when we get to Black Lightning. All right, let's go into Batwoman Season 1, Episode 10, How Queer Everything Is Today. So the episode opens up with a runaway subway train. And the train is heading straight for a brick wall when Batwoman saves the day, halting the train with her grappling hook from her motorcycle.
That was a tough pill to swallow. I'm not going to lie.
I know it was, wasn't it?
The world's strongest grappling hook.
Now, I have to tell you, that reminded me of Sam Raimi's Spider-Man episodes where... isn't that the one where he tries to... He does something like that.
Yeah. He gets in front of the train, the subway, runaway subway. It's in Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I was trying to remember.
And he shoots his webs out until he finally pulls it to a stop. And then they did a little bit of an homage to it in the first Marvel Spider-Man. It was the first one when he tries to pull the ferry back together.
Yeah.
And... yeah, but so like, think about in that famous scene with the Tobey Maguire. It's like it takes everything he has, and he has super strength with hundreds of webs he's shooting out at that point and trying to hold on to, and Batwoman's just casually like grappling hook, instant stop.
You can't tell me
momentum works.
I know you can't tell me that train would not pull that motorcycle forward.
Yeah. And then going later into the episode, when we eventually learn that the culprit had planned to stop the train, when exactly was she planning on stopping that train? Because there was no room left to stop when Batwoman stops it.
I know. I remember getting to that point and saying, really?
Yeah. I thought there was a few interesting things with this. So we see one thing I really liked with all of these shows, is really seeing how deeply everybody was affected by Crisis, and the fact that they saw thousands of worlds die in everything that they went through. And so you see Batwoman trying to kind of cope with that a little bit before then, you know, kind of refocusing and doing her own thing. But I really liked that. I liked that you didn't have this monumental event and they just sort of moved on from it. I liked that there was still that focus, that sort of lingering effect of it.
Yeah, and I think one of the biggest things in this episode was Batwoman wanting to have her truth. Because one of the things we see in this episode is when she gets saved by that cop, Slam Bradley, I think his name was, and the media is all about them having their romantic coupling or wanting them to get together, and that's not who she is. And I think the big thing about this episode is her having her truth. And we see that at the end of the episode when Kara does that article on her.
Yeah, that was cool. I did like that. I will say, though, the one thing, I mean, they sort of saved it at the end. I was so confused why when she tracks down the hacker and it's a high school girl who's in the closet and she gets really told off by the girl in the bathroom and then just sort of lets her go. I was like, wait, she still broke the law. Maybe she didn't have murder intentions, but like, what? Just because she yells at you, that makes it okay? And I know they say that at the end she makes her do community service and blah, 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 but I was like, what is going on? And then when Alice kidnaps the girl, at one point Alice is standing there empty-handed, Batwoman is like a foot away from her, and they're just talking, negotiating. I'm like, why are you just standing there?
There's capture her.
Can do right now. I was so baffled by it. I was like, why are you waiting? It was just, I was unbelievably frustrated with her. She was just like, I'm just going to stand here and negotiate with her. Alice could have killed that girl at any time because Batwoman was just standing there letting it happen.
I know. I agree with you. Batwoman should have taken action. She had plenty of time.
But it was so out of – I just didn't understand it. I mean, it was – she is so, normally – her and basically every CW hero is so about, like, you know, taking initiative. I just couldn't. I was like, what is going on? They specifically have her empty-handed multiple times. That was driving me nuts, Drew. I was like, why are you just standing there?
Yeah, I had the same issue with that. I think the really interesting thing and the real effect from Crisis at the end of this issue is we know Alice gets captured and is locked up. Kate returns to her office and surprised because a Beth lookalike comes in her office claiming that she's Beth. And we see Batwoman's in disbelief about it. She's like trying to pull off false face's face and, you know, and Beth's like, I'm back from a semester abroad. So now we have two Beths.
I think, and I don't think this is clear. This is definitely not the only episode that we see this. There are glitches in this new universe, which is something we saw with Crisis on Infinite Earths too. You know, there were sort of errors, and I mean, some of the errors they attributed were really just like writer screw-ups that forgot what the status quo was supposed to be. But with this show and with the other CW shows, what's really interesting is they're showing that this new world was formed, but there were sort of like cracks and flaws in all these worlds getting merged. And this appears as of now to be one of, that's my assumption, isn't it, for you? I mean, I assume that this is...
Yeah, I think this is a Beth.
Like she basically somehow snuck through in this new world.
Yeah, I believe this is a Beth from a different universe. And I'm, from my take, what little glimpse we got at the end is that she didn't die.
Yeah, well, this is a. Yeah, that's a Beth from a timeline where that accident doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's exactly
what somehow I meant. Both timelines exist, and so now you've got both versions of Beth.
Yeah, so it's going to get real interesting, especially when Beth finds out about Beth. That's going to get real interesting. I don't think Alice is not going to be happy if there's another Beth.
I'm not going to lie. This has been the first real like hook or twist that's really intrigued me with Batwoman. I've for the most part enjoyed a lot of the episodes, but nothing's really been like, ooh, now that's intriguing.
Yeah.
This was kind of the first thing I was like, oh, okay. Now I'm interested. Now, because now it's really, I honestly think a lot of the shows benefit when they incorporate themselves within that world, when they really embrace the fact that they're part of a shared CW world. And now they're kind of leaning into that more, and I'm interested in that.
What's going to be really interesting is Alice, when she finds out there's another Beth, one that Kate could probably get along with better than her. Yeah. She is not going to go for it. She's going to want to kill this other Beth. Guarantee it. So it's going to get real interesting. All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Supergirl, Season 5, Episode 10, The Bottle Episode. Oh, man. This show had major consequences from Crisis.
Yeah, huge, huge changes.
I think one of the biggest things that surprised me was when we saw Lena, I was not expecting her to have any memory intact. We find out that Lex Luthor made a deal with the Monitor that in return for his help, Lena would retain her memories. What was interesting is Lena does retain her memories, and she spends most of the episode deciding should she team up with Lex or with Kara. And it was also interesting to see Lillian back. And the Luthor name is a good name. They're not villains in this, so real intriguing.
Yeah, definitely. Now, one thing it does, I have to say, it does make Lena much more interesting than just simply hitting the reset button on her, because then she's almost a non-character at that point, in my opinion. Like, she just becomes a little bit of a side note. It's hard if she's not aware of all of the history and all of that past that she's, that negative and positive past that she shares with Supergirl, then, like, she's just kind of there, right?
Yeah.
So it does make it more interesting. However, she was part of an overall trend with a lot of these shows that was somewhat frustrating in that it felt like they were cheating a little bit, where they're just sort of like, yeah, nobody remembers except you also remember and you also remember and you also remember. And it was like, I mean, come on. I'm more interested in seeing a lot of characters act as, you know, like in this new world as if they don't know the old world. Lena, I will say, it makes sense, but some of the other ones, like, for jumping ahead, like the Green Arrow episode, I thought that felt lazy to me. So it's interesting, and I'm curious how many more times we're going to see that. I feel like we're inevitably going to see that with Flash, too.
Yeah, I'm wondering what they're going to do with Flash. But we're not going to be seeing that for a few weeks.
Right.
Now, I thought it was pretty funny having all those doppelgangers of Brainiac 5.
Yes. And this is, again, this is where we're seeing, again, there's some sort of, like, you know, crack in the world, so to speak. There's not quite, it didn't quite form perfectly. So that was, it was definitely cool getting these different versions of Brainy. And then the big thing, we finally got the right Brainiac 5. He looks so much better. It's baffling to me. Like when they had him, when he finally like takes his inhibitors off and becomes the real, his true self, his true Brainiac 5. It was like, how do you see that design and look back at your initial design of him and go, yeah, we nailed it the first time.
No, this pretty much points out that, hey, we screwed up and we're fixing it for you. Thanks.
I mean, he's just looks so much better. So much better.
I'm wondering how Director Faber liked this episode with his love of Brainiac 5.
I would imagine you've got to be happy, right? I mean, they finally changed him to look what like, and he also like, if I'm maybe I paid attention correctly, it felt like he changed his voice a little bit too. It didn't seem like he talked exactly the same way afterwards.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. It did feel a little different. But what an interesting concept to have one of the Brainiacs bottle their whole Earth, but you know, and since saving it.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Now, whether they ever do anything with it will be interesting. Hopefully they don't just leave it in the in the DEO basement or something. You know what I mean?
Oh, they will. I'm sure it'll come back at some point, but it's going to be sort of like the Bottled City of Kandor, right? You know,
yeah.
Like where it's just kind of always there. That day, it felt like their Kandor is kind of what it felt like.
Yeah, it did, didn't it?
Which is fine. Honestly, I'm fine because I don't need that to be a major plot, if I'm being honest.
So it feels like they're changing Brainiac's character, you know, moving forward with this episode. He breaks up with Nia Noll and basically makes a deal with Lex, which he's going to keep secret. And we know what happens when that kind of thing happens.
Only good things, Drew.
Yeah. So
I'm excited. I'm just excited because the design of Brainiac 5 in his true form is a vast improvement. And I'm also just more interested in the character because he was basically like a Sisko character, but even like he was more of a joke, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You felt like he was just kind of there to be laughed at most of the time. And I'm curious to see him now, you know, mattering, I guess.
Yeah. And bringing John Cryer in, it seems like he's going to be on full time now.
Which is great.
That is freaking awesome. I love his portrayal of Lex Luthor.
I'm glad whatever the reason, they were only able to use him three times or whatever, three or four times last year, which is insane to me. I still can't get over how dumb that is. Whoever finally realized that that's dumb and we should just let him use him is, thank you.
And that says it all right there.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 3, Episode 10, The Book of Markovia, Chapter 1, Blessings and Curses Reborn. Why couldn't the Crisis fix these long freaking titles?
That opening scene where he's basically summarizing his experience with Crisis, I maintain, so nobody else hears that broadcast. Remember, Gambi can't hear him.
Right.
You've got to remember, Black Lightning has his, like, the memory thing restored by Martian Manhunter.
Right.
He knows that that used to be an old world. So when he says Superman is real, to him, that's shocking because he was on a world where that wasn't the case. But on that, we know from Crisis, he is on the same Earth. And so for Gambi, like if Gambi had heard him, Gambi would be like, yeah, I know. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I don't know. It felt like they were coming back from a different dimension.
Well, I mean, in a sense they were. But, I mean, because they kind of were. They went to this different world. And now they're on, I mean, you know, they're not in their original world.
Okay, this is harder to argue with you right now because I've seen your point. I mean, Now that you're, I can see they're coming back to the same Earth, but I don't know.
I will defend you in that this show does not make it clear that they are on a new world, but Crisis made it very explicit that all of the CW shows were on one Earth.
Okay. I'm not going to argue with you anymore about it until I see proof otherwise. How's that?
Well, and then and also, and I will say the other thing that defends that argument is that even in this show, the one thing that is consistent on Black Lightning is that they say that the multiverse is gone. So if the multiverse is gone, they got to be, you know what I mean? They got to be on that Earth.
Yeah.
Only one.
Okay. Okay. Well, yeah, I'm not going to argue anymore with you on that.
I will say I still suspect that Black Lightning is going to be
separate.
Very independent from the other shows, because it would, I mean, at least until, I think the earliest that we would see something different would be next season.
Crisis, yeah. It would be cool to see Flash pop in an episode, but I doubt if that happens.
I can't see that happening this year. I mean, I wouldn't shock me. I think next year going forward, I think we will see something different with Black Lightning. This is such a monumental plot, too, if you think about it. Like, I was watching this episode, I was like, where do you even go from here? Like, the military has effectively taken over the town. They're in open revolt. What even is next season? Like, you've almost got to, like, completely shift gears, because you can't keep trying to escalate.
Yeah.
Right? Because then the only thing next would be, I mean, like, what even is the next step after that? I think next year we're going to see a really different show, because this feels like a sort of culmination of this build up that we've gotten in Freeland.
Yeah.
You know, this government conspiracy that was sort of boiling under the surface. It's finally come to a head this season. It's gotten huge. They've basically taken over the town. You've got this rebellion. I mean, if you try and escalate that again, I think it just gets dumb. Like, I can't imagine trying to top that with something even more extreme.
Yeah. One thing we see in this episode is Lynn's addiction. It's at its worst, I think.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good at all. We see Jennifer walks in on her mother, and she just drops her green light and then freaks out. And Jefferson realizes what's going on finally when he confronts her. Of course, he doesn't really get to deal with it because Henderson needs him. And we see Jennifer go to the aid of her friend Brandon when the earthquakes begin. And when they get captured by those ASA agents and Jennifer's able to get out of break out, it just shows how powerful she is. She's the most powerful one out of all three of them, I think.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And when she goes to kill Odell and it's a hologram, that was interesting. So it seems like maybe the it's coming to a head between Black Lightning's team and Odell, but I don't know.
Yeah,
can they drag it out for the rest of the season? I don't think they can.
I think they will. It's got to be Odell at the end of the season. Like, if it's him 2/3 of the way through, and then how do you end it?
Well, you know, maybe we take care of Odell, and then all of a sudden Odell gets taken care of. Oh, shoot, we still got the Markovians here. We need to deal with them, too. That might be how it happens.
That's a fair point, but they've also been such a non-factor. That would be almost weird for them to suddenly actually matter.
Well, if Odell's out of the way, you still got the problem with them. Their threat could increase, you know what I mean? They could, if they did it right, it could flow right. If they don't, then it won't, but I don't know. I don't see how they could drag Odell out for the whole season.
Well,
it just seems like it's coming to a head. And I don't want it to turn into another like we had on Flash last season.
My question would be, I don't know for sure. I feel like it might be ending soon. I don't know that this is, I don't think Black Lightning is a 22 part show like the other ones are.
It might not be. I don't know. I can't remember what its usual season is.
Yeah, but you know, like, I almost wonder, and I can't see it, because what I'm looking at, the series listing that I'm seeing goes up to episode 13, and that might just be what they've announced so far. But that could also be the end. I mean, 13 episodes almost seems about right for what Black Lightning's been.
Yeah, you might be right about that, and I must be forgetting. If that's true, then that makes sense. They'd use Odell to the end. So that would only be three more episodes.
I mean, but they would also kind of jive with what we're seeing, where we're kind of seeing a buildup.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't know. I will say I don't know for sure, but I don't. Black Lightning up till this point has not been as long of a season as the other shows.
And I'm fine with that, because then you don't have all those filler episodes.
No, and that's one of the show has probably been the best out of the CW bunch in terms of not having as near. I mean, they still have had a few, but they're much better about avoiding filler episodes.
I agree with you on that. Oh, one other thing I wanted to bring up before we move on. I love that new dude they introduced that can...
The tech guy?
Yeah, the tech.
TC? Yeah.
Yeah. It feels like they're going to be bringing him in, you know, joining the team in the future. But if they do that, I'm wondering if they're planning on getting rid of Gambi. It feels like we don't need both of them. You know what I mean?
I think you might be onto something with that. Part of me feels like they're planning on writing Gambi off.
Yeah, that's what it felt like to me, too.
It would also kind of make sense with the show, to be honest with you. Like, just to be honest, like having the tech support guy be a young black character would jive more with the show than an old white dude.
True. Plus, if they're going to be done with the ASA this season, it makes sense that we wouldn't need Gambi anymore.
Yeah.
So, and a tech guy that can talk to tech, you know, he'd be very useful for the team.
Agreed. I don't know. I mean, maybe they continue on with both, but part of me feels like they might be moving on from Gambi.
Yeah.
But maybe not. I'm not sure.
We'll just have to wait and see on that one. All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week, Arrow, Season 8, Episode 9, Green Arrow and the Canaries. So, this episode opens up with Laurel arriving in Star City in 2040 and failing to stop Helena Bertinelli's daughter, Bianca, from being kidnapped. So, the pilot introduces us to a new Star City, and it turns out Star City has been crime-free for 20 years. A fact that is repeated several times during this episode.
I really like the new future of Star. This is a much more satisfying end of Oliver's legacy, right?
Right.
Like, yes, things are starting to go wrong, but that's just natural. Like, that's just humanity. You can't be perfect forever.
No kidding.
But the bleak, because I know I saw some people were frustrated that this sort of undid the flash forwards that we had seen.
I was fine with that.
Were people really happy that the future of Star City was such a disaster?
Like wasn't.
I mean, that basically invalidates an entire show. I mean, the entirety of Arrow is essentially, if that original flash forward is what the future really was, that invalidates the entire show of Arrow, because it was all for nothing. Like, everything that they do to save the city, so to speak, over and over, doesn't work. They fail. Like, how is that satisfying? How is that for you to be like, yeah, I watched 8 seasons of a show only for it to just all end it terribly?
I know. It's satisfying to know that the city was saved.
Yeah. There are people got happy endings. Mia has a happy life. William has a happy life. The two, at least one of Diggle's sons has a pretty good life. The adopted son seems like it's a little bit rougher for him in the new future. My complaint was I really liked this new take, and not that, I mean, yes, Mia's going to end up as Green Arrow, but I would have been almost more curious to see it happen organically. It felt like the memory restoration thing felt like a cop-out, especially at the end when they restore JJ's memory. That one I was like, oh, come on. Like, it would have been far more interesting to have this dichotomy of this world that we saw what could have been, and then the world that it became instead. Why not stick with? I found that frustrating, because it was like they were trying to
force them into roles.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was just almost like, yeah, we're gonna change it so that it was a happy ending, but then we're just gonna restore everything to the way it was anyway. So it's almost like having your cake and eating it too. It's like, no, you gotta pick one. I mean, I don't want that bad ending, but, like, if you want all the characters to be acting like it was the bad ending, then stick to your guns. I think it's the wrong decision, but stick to your guns. Likewise, if you think that that's not the right ending, that it should have been a good ending to Oliver's legacy, then stick to your guns with that. You can't. I just don't think you can do both. I would have much, much rather have seen Mia organically become Green Arrow in this new world.
I agree with you on that. Some of the strange things we see in this episode is we have Dinah, who, when she comes back from Crisis, is in the future.
Yeah, that was. I have to say, I was very glad that they clarified very early that both of them time traveled, because I was like, I'm sorry, it's 2040 and they both look like they're in their 30s.
I know. I see. And that's why I thought originally they were going to bring Mia back to the past. But I guess this makes more sense.
I mean, it works because now you don't have to put those actors in makeup every day. So
yeah, we don't have to make them old.
Every day. I mean, they would have had to have done it every day. That would have just gotten unbelievably tedious.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting that Laurel from Earth 2 survived. And did she travel from the present? I can't remember. Did they say she traveled from the present to the future on purpose?
Yeah, Sarah brought her there.
Oh, Sarah brought her there. Okay, I kind of missed that. But
right, well, it's because that's why she's there, because Sarah basically gives her this video, I mean, tells her and gives her proof of if the Bertinelli daughter is allowed to die, that this is what will happen to Star City in 2041. It's going to be a disaster, right?
Okay, yeah, that's right.
And so she's basically going back to – she's doing basically like Terminator, right? She's going back to the moment to try and stop the moment from happening.
Okay, and then that's what starts everything off. Okay, yeah. I had a few issues with this episode. That was namely falling asleep.
I dozed off a few times because go ahead, sorry.
I said I dozed off a few times because I have this cold and I was tired.
That's fair. I have to give the show credit. I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed the flash forwards. Maybe it was because they focused on it for the whole episode, so it wasn't disjointed. So to a positive, it held my attention better than the flash forwards had, because I really did not like those. That being said, I'm still not really sold on the story. I can't say at the end of the episode that I was like, oh yeah, got to see where this goes.
I have to agree with you. I mean, I did doze on and off through it, but I couldn't go back and rewatch it. I couldn't bring myself to go back and rewatch it. I'm going to check it out when it comes out and, go from there on it. It's a DC show. I'll probably end up watching it anyways. But
I just wonder about the long-term prospects of it. I mean, Legends has somehow managed to continue scraping by every year, much to the shock, I think, of both of us, because it always seems like it's on the cusp of getting canceled, especially after that first year. But this show just seems like a short-term show. I just cannot see 8 seasons of Green Arrow and the Canaries. You know what I mean? It seems like it maybe gets ones. It gets the pickup because it's the follow-up to Arrow, and it feels like you got to do it. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not convinced that this is a long-term show.
I'm not either. And they're going to have to do something to get it to take off.
And what's interesting to me, and I was talking to my girlfriend about this, is that CW must have some data on their viewership that shows that it skews really heavily towards the female population. Because if you notice, all of their shows are moving strongly towards that, which is totally fine. But you've got Supergirl, you've got Batwoman, Legends is a female lead, which is great. You've got Arrow, which is now transitioning over towards Arrow and the Canaries. You've got Black Lightning is technically a male-led show, but, I mean, most of the episodes are focusing on the daughters. I wonder if they've got a lot of data on that that's showing that, and that's why they're moving in that direction.
That could be. And then you also got new shows like Nancy Drew.
Right, and we know that they're going to be airing Stargirl as well.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes sense as a CW show, but again, it's another example of a lot of the shows that they're doing are female superheroes, which, again, I'm not phrasing this as a complaint. It's just an observation that I've seen, that there's a very clear trend to what they're doing. And so I'm wondering if maybe you and I don't think that Arrow and the Canaries will succeed, but maybe it will, because clearly CW is seeing something that you and I aren't, because we're guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So that was one thing that occurred to me while I was watching. I was like, man, I'm not sure about this, but I could be wrong, because clearly CW is very obviously trending towards one direction, and Arrow and the Canary fits that trend. So maybe it will succeed, and I just don't know what I'm talking about.
That wouldn't be the first time, now would it?
No, not at all. Not at all. Like I said, I'm very willing to admit that I'm wrong. So I don't know. I am curious to see, because this has not officially been picked up. I'm curious to see if it will get picked up, and then I really am very curious in the long term prospect of the show.
I'm betting we hear something in the next few weeks.
I think you kind of have to, right? I feel like if we don't hear something in a couple weeks, that's not good.
Nope.
It's already weird that they haven't, like, Superman is picked up.
Yep.
We know Superman is going to be a show, and so you already actually filmed an actual pilot for this show, and you're still not going to say something? That's not a good sign.
Nope. So I'm guessing we'll probably hear something in the next few weeks. So we'll let you know. All right, let's move on to our last episode for this week. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 5, Episode 2, Meet the Legends. Oh, man, this was definitely a Legends episode.
So funny. What a funny episode.
I know. It was so fun. The documentary angle, I thought that was great.
Yes. And then we got a ton of meta jokes too. Like, you know, I don't know if this is right for an audience. I don't know if they could follow this sort of thing. The jokes like that were really funny. I really enjoyed those.
I think one thing that the Legends did good about this, their new reset, is getting rid of the Time Bureau. I didn't think we needed that anymore.
I mean, it always sort of felt pointless.
Yes.
One thing I never really understood was, like, the Time Bureau was in theory responsible for fixing problems with the timeline, and yet they never did. It was always inevitably the Legends.
Yes.
And it was always, honestly, one thing has always been, it's clearly part of the DNA of the show, but one thing I've never felt is necessary is them constantly in conflict with their governing body, so to speak. Like, that's been consistent from the start, even season one, is the Legends being at odds with the people running them.
Right.
And it continues in this episode, but it's way, way less antagonistic. Because that's never really been an element that I've enjoyed all that much. It's not really taken away from the show, but I'm always like, I mean, I would rather see the conflict with the actual bad guy than them trying to, like, you know, not get lectured by the boss.
Now, one of the things we see in this episode is Mona is now Mick, Rebecca Silver's book agent. And basically, we see Mick hand that off to her, and it looked like she's leaving the show. Is that what you...
God, I hope so.
I knew you'd be happy about that.
Very, very excited. I will say, her scenes were really funny. I have to admit, I really enjoyed her scenes in this episode. I kind of wish that I don't feel like they used her quite this way last season. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I was just really biased against her. I enjoyed her more this episode, but I was still like, when she kind of said, I'm going to go away, I was like, oh, really? One thing I thought this show did excellently, and I thought was really subtle in this, was how they pretended like Zari's brother had just been on the show the whole time.
Yes, they did a great job of that.
I thought they did an excellent job where the show itself didn't even call attention to it. Obviously, at the end they did, but, like, the show itself basically just acted like this dude has been on the show the whole time, like it was a character that we know.
Right. I liked how they did that, and I'm like, who's this dude?
That was really – I honestly was very impressed with how the show handled that, because, I mean, they – you know, obviously you know that he doesn't belong there, so to speak, and that he's new, but the way that the show sort of rolls with it, as they should, right? Because in that timeline, they don't know any better. That was fascinating. I thought they did a really great job with that.
Yeah, I did too. I like how they use Rasputin in this.
Yeah, he was funny. I really enjoyed their take on him.
Yeah, so I thought that was really cool.
Oh, man. The way they defeated him, too, was... I couldn't believe he actually did it, because when he went inside, I was like, oh, he's going to expand. But they're not actually going to. They won't actually show that.
They showed
like,
it.
We'll just hear it. And then they actually showed it. I was like, oh, my God.
I know. I was surprised by that, too.
That shot, I truly did not think that they would actually go there with it.
They went there.
Yeah, they did. They did.
How we see Constantine goes back to hell in this one on purpose. So, are we going to have less Constantine this season, or what do you think about that?
I think we're not going to see him for a little bit, but I feel like that's always sort of been the case. He's always sort of been like a half member of the team.
That's true. That's
true.
You
know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's weird because he's got to be a full cast member, but it feels like he's more of a guest star, like a permanent guest star.
Right. I think one of the things we're going to see is Nate searching for Zari.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Now, does it feel like she might be leaving the show, maybe? Or
I don't think so.
I mean, how can they, with her being replaced or her missing or whatnot?
I think we're just, I suspect, I could be wrong, that I think we might end up either she takes her brother's spot and her brother leaves again, or we just end up with both.
Oh, okay. Well, that could
be
possible.
I don't think that they're going to, because the problem is if you write her, if Nate restores her and then she leaves the show, then Nate logically would also leave the show. And then we know that Ray and his girlfriend are leaving the show. Then who's left?
Yeah, that's true. Are we going to get Ryan Cho on the show now? I'm wondering.
I got to say, that was one thing I was a little bit surprised. I honestly just assumed that we would see him.
Yeah, I did too. And I was surprised when we didn't.
He's got to pop up. What was the point of putting him in the show?
I know. I mean, that only makes sense. Otherwise, what's the point of having him in Crisis at all?
Yeah, and I know. I can't remember. I think it was Mike said that he was the paragon of humanity, so you've got to have a normal dude in the group. But, technically, you had other non-powered people in that group. You had Sarah. So you could have made her, in theory, you could have made Sarah the paragon of humanity because she is just a person also.
Yeah.
Very skilled, very, very skilled, but does not have powers. So I got that. I got the point of him not being the Atom or anything on that, but we know that the Atom is leaving the show and you introduce Ryan. He's got to be, right? I mean, otherwise it's just, that's such a weird, weird choice.
Yeah.
If he's not being introduced to be a long-term character.
Yeah. And maybe they just didn't want to introduce him in this first episode.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and again, that's fine, because Isis, maybe we won't see him until we get closer to whenever Brandon Routh's character is getting ready to leave, which I don't know when that's supposed to be.
Yeah. I don't know either. I haven't heard anything else except that he was leaving the show.
Unless, I was under the impression that it was not the finale. It seemed like it was supposed to be like halfway through.
Yeah, that's the feeling I got too. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have any shout-outs, Cletus?
Yeah, so I wanted to get back briefly to our conversation about the state of the multiverse, so to speak. what I think is really fascinating is you have this sort of amalgamation of Crisis on Infinite Earths and Infinite Crisis. And I think we kind of talked about it a little bit in our Crisis podcast. But what's fascinating is that from the CW character's perspective, they are in a post-Crisis on Infinite Earths reality where there was only one Earth for DC publishing for that time. And they're all under that impression. However, we know as the viewers that there is a multiverse still, and the other universes are non-CW worlds with the like half exception of Stargirl. And that's sort of interesting because that's sort of what happened with Infinite Crisis. So this is my recommendation to go read this. And in combination with it's a combo of Infinite Crisis and 52, the follow-up to it. In that, Alexander Luthor, who was a major character in Crisis on Infinite Earths, basically comes back in an attempt to restore the multiverse, to restore his lost world. And he appears to fail in the main comic. But then in 52, you learn that he did succeed. There is a multiverse and nobody realizes it. And so that's kind of fascinating to me that they sort of found the happy medium, because one of the best things about DC is the multiverse. And so they didn't get rid of it. That was one. I mean, that's a very common complaint about the legacy of Crisis on Infinite Earths, is that it temporarily got rid of the multiverse. And so they kind of run with that status quo on the shows, which I think is cool. But they're still telling you, yeah, but that's not actually true. There is a multiverse. They just don't know it.
Do you think they're going to be working towards finding the multiverse again?
I suspect strongly that Flash will figure it out at some point.
That's what I'm thinking, too.
He's the most logical character to figure that out, because the Flash in all mediums has been the one that has, you know, is the one that deals with alternate realities. He's the original character that did it, even in the comics and in the shows. So, yeah, I mean, maybe we don't see it this year, but I feel like at some point, Flash will have something where they realize that there is still a multiverse out there.
Right.
It's just not the same one that they had before.
Exactly. I have a feeling that that'll happen too.
I mean, if for no other reason, because if there's not, you're stuck with Nash Wells as the permanent Wells. And I just can't see that. I can't imagine that that's the one that they're going to actually stick on.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
I could be wrong. I mean, maybe they find a different way to do a different Wells next year. But if they don't do something with the multiverse, then Nash Wells slash former Pariah becomes the only
Wells.
That seems like an odd one to settle on.
Well, there's still one other thing they could do with them: Reverse Flash.
True. That's true. But I think you and I both prefer when it's not Tom Cavanaugh.
Yeah, I prefer. I can't remember his name. But the other one, I like him a lot.
Yeah, I do. I mean, clearly Tom Cavanaugh was great. He was the best, I think, the best Arrow villain that first season. But, man, I really like the guy that plays the actual Yggdrasil.
Yeah, me too. All right, and for my shout-out, I'm going to shout out about a different comic, an old comic, actually. I found one of my cross-gen graphic novels for a comic called Ruse. It was a Sherlock Holmes type of comic about a guy named Simon Archard, and his assistant's name was Emma. So it's kind of like a Sherlock Holmes kind of thing. But she had his assistant. It was from her point of view, and she had magical powers. And I don't remember what happens in it. And I started reading it just because I needed something at that time. My tablet was dead or something. I needed something to read, so I picked it up and started reading. I was like, man, I forgot how really good this was. And I forgot how really good the CrossGen comics were. CrossGen was a company that came about, I think, in 98 or 99. I was introduced to them at Wizard World in Chicago. And what was unique about their comics was they had different genres. It just wasn't superheroes. They had detective, they had fantasy, they had sci-fi, they had magic. And it was all this one universe, but it had different genres of stories in it. And it was kind of cool. It was short-lived because the company went bankrupt, but I love some of the stories they had. And I suggest if you find any back issues of that or anything, pick some of those up. They had some great writers on it, like Mark Waid and Ron Mars, and some great artwork, too. So if you come across any of those back issues, I suggest picking them up and checking them out. It was a really great universe, even though it was short-lived. All right, well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about, you can give us a call on our feedback line at 317-564-9133. Leave us a message. Or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. Coming up next week, we're going to have Batman Curse of the White Knight. And I'm not sure. It's issue number 6, so I'm not sure if it's the last one or not. I couldn't remember, Cletus. We have Detective Comics, Far Sector. I don't know if you've read any of the Far Sectors yet, have you?
I have not.
Shazam, Superman, Wonder Twins, Wonder Woman, and of course, all our CW shows, except for Flash. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Power. Turbines to speed.
You're ready to move up.
has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.